Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here tonight continuing our expectations series. And tonight we're going to talk about two players, Travis Jones and Rasheen Ali on the offense. Joining me to do that is Jordan Koh of Situation Room. Jordan, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure, my friend. This is a great time of year. I love doing these shows and getting most of the Baltimore analyst community involved in this. Certainly everybody who wants to be has a chance to do it. And really, really appreciate you coming on the show and doing this as always. I'll let you pick who's the undercard on this duo. Pretty important duo for the team.
Yeah, it was fun to pick between Ali and Jones. But why don't we start with Ali, the draft pick, and kind of the role from a running back perspective?
All right. Well, sounds good. Ali, fifth round pick, number 165. Might have been a little bit of a reach as I saw it. He was really the first of the Ravens' need selections in this draft. They had four rounds of great value selections, five total players, including TJ Tampa and Devontae Walker in that fourth round. But Rasheen Ali, the first, I think, guy that they picked for on a need basis. And obviously, they liked him, but I think he was a guy who might have gone later in this draft. 5'11", 206. It'd be 23 years old. He is 23 years old, I believe. But what are your initial thoughts on him?
I mean, it's interesting because he was hurt. So the Ravens are obviously, there's some projection here, and it must have been, there must have been something from, just the overall perspective that the Ravens really liked about this guy. I mean, running back is a critical position for the way the Ravens run this offense, the type of guy that they might want, and, how they're approaching that. I mean, Ali had some really nice runs on tape that really popped. And so, if you're looking upside like that, fifth round picks, I mean, look, you're at best one out of three shot at taking a fifth round pick and then turning into kind of a viable NFL long-term starter anyway, probably less than that. So, you know, let's not overstate the kind of taking him a little early. I think once you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, or fifth and sixth rounds, there's not a whole lot of interchangeability to some of these guys that you might be taking in the seventh round too.
Meaning there is interchangeability.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay. I thought that's where you're going with that. And I agree with it. Fifth round pick is not the end of the world. I wouldn't want to see them do the thing with a third round pick. But, you know, part of the reasons why the fifth round picks haven't always worked out is they've had some real long shot swing and a misses on stylistic and need guys. The big one being Ben Mason a couple of years ago. I mean, just a terrible pick. That they will keep coming back in history. And, you know, the Ravens have had plenty of good fifth-round picks on the offensive line. Matt Judon, an outside linebacker, they've had other good fifth-round picks as well. That's not the entire number. Jermaine Lewis, if you want to go way back. But you're probably right. It's a little bit lower chance to work out. But, you know how I really don't like the lottery ticket notion? I think with the Ravens, you got a 42% chance of that pick working out. With most teams, you got a 25% chance of that pick working out. So you don't want to waste your 42% shots. I mean, you know, you're if you're a 420 hitter, you don't pinch hit for that guy. You pinch hit for the guy who's hitting 250 or less. I mean, that's what you do. So anyway, to let that metaphor kind of go. Exciting one cut runner certainly brings that stylistic fit to the Ravens. They did pretty well, I thought, with Justice Hill as a speed guy last year. They certainly did extremely well on the carries that Mitchell had, that very limited vein of gold we saw in midseason. But unfortunately, he wasn't still around for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the... I mean, obviously, with Derrick Henry on board, you feel much better about the Ravens running back room, but you don't feel a whole lot better. I mean, it's one of those things where before the Dobbins and Edwards injuries, you were really looking at a really strong two-headed monster, and it goes to show you how quickly at running back, with two guys that were, I think a lot of people would have agreed, were very talented. You know, obviously Edwards, the undrafted guy, but Dobbins from a draft capital perspective, on top of that being a second-round pick, there was a lot invested in the running back room by the Ravens from that perspective overall, and they really did come up short. I mean, Hill was a sixth round. Was he a sixth or seventh round pick himself?
No, Hill was an earlier pick, a three or a four. And I'd have to go back and look at exactly when he was drafted, but he might have been a four.
He was a four. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway,
I was thinking he was a much later draft pick. Yeah. So, I mean, the Ravens, the way they run their offense and what they do with Lamar, the way they spread things out and the way they want to attack, they're going to need bodies. And so I think when you look at Ali, that's the really interesting question here about some of the kind of like over-unders or good or great or however you want to qualify this is, you know, is he going to end up needing to play a role, and can you expect a rookie to meaningfully give you anything? You know, it's one of those things where I almost would want to be in the box of saying it's a great season if he doesn't have a single carry.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that probably means he's hurt. It doesn't necessarily mean
anything. No, it means that Derrick Henry and Justice Hill carried the load and they stayed healthy all year long.
Oh, how about that? He's active for 16 games and he gets 25 carries then. Sure. I'm more comfortable with that number. Yeah.
But conceptually, this idea that less touches in this instance for Ali is probably a better thing for the Ravens. Whereas the same thing kind of headed into the year that Dobbins was coming back and Edwards was there, the less touches for Justice Hill, the better coming into that season, just because you want your top horses to be there for you. But obviously this is about his performance and not about the Ravens' overall performance.
Right. Let's get back to Ali a little bit, because his college performance, he has some context issues that go with it, some tread wear questions that come with it. He has 589 career touches. That is moderately high tread wear for a college running back these days. He had some statistical shortcomings, particularly in his last season at Marshall. A poor Yakko number, 2.55, after being much better in 21-22, where he had 3.6 yards after contact. He doesn't help the team much as a receiver, a 5.4 yards per target receiver. You think a guy who's explosive like that at the college level is going to have more big plays that would fuel a higher YPT number? Not the case in his time. And then also is a very, very poor pass blocker. And that was against lesser competition in the Sun Belt. You know, it's not going to get easier on Sundays.
Yeah. And that's an area where the Ravens, I think, will be really focused. And I think, you know, as we look at kind of some of the shortcomings and some of the things that happened, you can't isolate a single game as a problem, but you look at what happened in the Kansas City game. And I wouldn't say Justice Hill overall is a bad pass blocker, but he had a very bad pass blocking day that day. And I think the playoff teams are not going to change their MO. And I think when the games are on the line, teams are going to continue to blitz the Ravens. And they're going to need they're either going to need a concept to get the ball out of Lamar's hands quickly, which is not his MO. He doesn't like to do that for a whole lot of reasons that have all been very beneficial to the outcome of what the Ravens have done. But they need a better pass blocking running back there to be able to, if they're going to be in those situations, give Lamar the time he needs.
Well, Derrick Henry is that guy. He's one of the better pass blocking running backs in the league. I don't know if he's going to be on the field on third down as much because they got to find some time to get him off the field. It could be he helps on early passing downs. I will say, if you're looking at the PFF pass blocking numbers for Justice Hill, there is something there. They don't score them as pass blocking snaps when he executes a chip block. Hill had, I think, probably the most chip blocks on the entire Ravens team this last year. We've got R43 or L43 just littered all over the score sheet. And it's an underscore if it's a set block. Those are the ones you see scored as PFF pass blocking snaps. And he did pretty well on those, by the way. You mentioned it earlier, and you're right on the money that he's a pretty good pass blocker. But I think he's a good chip blocker as well, and that might be a little bit lost in terms of what you see there. It may be actually very well reflected, by the way, in the PFF ratings, because oftentimes they'll take the snap out, but they still have a pass blocking score underlying that play. So if he threw a good chip block, they've got it in there. What I want to say, one of the things we're kind of assuming about the Ravens and the running back room is that the offensive line is going to regel. And it is. It's a new offensive line they're going to have, that they're going to be similar to what they were before when they had Powers and Zeitler, or even when they had Simpson and Zeitler and Morgan Moses, you know, as three of the five spots. Well, now it's Ronnie Stanley again, who was one of the questionable ones to begin with. They've got Linderbaum, who's outstanding and hopefully could have another big year. And then we're going to have two new guards. We probably will see a new right tackle in Rosengarten at some point during the year. Fair?
Yeah. Okay. Well, even if it's Filele, it's still a new right tackle.
Yeah, there you go. Anybody but McCary really would be a new right tackle at this point. And I don't think he's going to be the guy. I'll say this. If Patrick McCary ends up being the right tackle for the Baltimore Ravens at any point during 2024, it is a bad thing. Not because he might not be the most talented of the group. It's just a bad thing because it means somebody else didn't work out.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. It's kind of like this concept with Ali, that the more touches that he gets this year, the inverse ratio of what that means for the team overall.
All right. So the reason I bring up the offensive line again is because we assume that offensive line can regel. And one of the things they've done to a terrific, I mean, they made Mitchell a great back because Mitchell ended up being a much better breakaway threat in terms of broken missed tackles forced than we had even expected. And others like Hill, like Edwards, certainly over recent years have been outstanding because they get more first contact and level two opportunities. And I think Ali really needs that, maybe more than any of the other backs that the Ravens have, if he's going to be special. He needs to really not be bothered with defensive line contact. He is a patient runner, kind of a space finder in that regard. But the Ravens need to make it easy for him, in my opinion, to get those first contact opportunities at level two.
You know, it's interesting whether or not they see something, you know, especially in regards to the patience, that is similar to what you get from a guy like Derrick Henry. Or, you know, when I watch Ali and I've seen some of his tape, he reminds me a little bit of Ray Rice in terms of what you would get from him. Obviously, I think not the same top end speed and not quite the same explosiveness. Obviously, Ray Rice at his prime was fantastic. But you see some of that patience in terms of the cuts, being able to wait for things to set up. You see the same things from Derrick Henry. And so I do wonder whether or not this was equally a need fit because the Ravens needed somebody at running back and also kind of something to this the scheme of what they're trying to do. But we've seen plenty of chatter, I think, by different people that cover the Ravens talking about Henry and kind of yards before he was contacted versus yards before Gus Edwards was contacted last year. And looking at how I think Henry was like 0.3 or 0.4 yards behind that. Right. And so if you're thinking about how the Ravens can add to that and using a patient runner and setting up something like that with a guy like Ali, there's an opportunity there for him, if the scheme is appropriate, for him to fit like a glove right in kind of what you're saying. But I mean, the big question for next year is the offensive line. I mean, if you don't have questions about the Ravens offensive line going into this year, then your glasses are very purple colored.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. You mentioned the style. I talked about the stylistic fit originally, but you just commented on it there. I want to say something is that I think the Ravens, and I know you made this point at quarterback when we were talking about the Leary selection. Okay. But I think, or actually we were talking about on the quarterback show about how it might be nice to have a pocket passer to go along with Lamar just because it's a different thing. And Leary does actually meet that standard. Certainly he's definitely a pocket guy. I think the Ravens, you know, they know what they like to do, but they're also very versatile in terms of how they can run their run scheme. And I think they really try and run it against where the other team is strong. So you really mean not into the teeth of the strength opposed to the strengths. You understand what I'm saying with that? So it really helps them more than it helps other teams to have this mix of back types, you know, have a speed back, have a one cut back, have a power back, make sure that all the bases are covered so you can run your run game however the hell you want to. All right.
Yeah. I totally. Oh, sorry. Sorry about that, Ken. I think I'm a little connection issue. But, you know, I think what the issue ends up being is that Ali just isn't fitted into the schematic picture here. I think he is a longer term project, an emergency player in terms of what we're getting on the roster overall. And the Ravens are not going to be, look, I mean, go back and look at any Ravens rookie running back in terms of the number of carries and the number of yards they got outside of J.K. Dobbins. It's been a very long time. I think maybe back to Ray Rice, and since we've seen a guy have a significant role, maybe Javorius Buck Allen had somewhat of a significant role, but he had what, 400 or 500 yards. And I think like 70, you know, something like that in terms of, I was looking at this just before this.
Well, Edwards,
137 carries. Yeah. 137 carries, his rookie year.
Edwards had a big rookie year and he didn't come up until midseason. And then he was great when he did. It came up basically at the same time Lamar did. So he played in 11 games, started 6 in 2018, ran the ball 137 times for 5.2. So, you know, I'm not saying it can't happen. It's probably less likely to happen. Mitchell just had the greatest season ever for a running back with 40 plus carries. And that's, you know, I think it's possible to get a rookie on the field for the Ravens. I think it actually is a fairly friendly environment to do it. The problem is that they usually have a stable of pretty decent running backs that they're working with. And you're right that Harbaugh, I think, has a bias towards veteran players that shows up both on the depth chart, which supposedly football operations has nothing to do with, but they know damn well, the PR people know damn well where their bread is buttered and how they need to set that death chart to put the rookie at the bottom every time, even if it means, you know, a first round draft pick is your fourth guy on the depth chart.
Yeah, no, it 100%. And John Harbaugh has always kind of been that way. I don't expect that to change. And I think what I would add to that is I haven't seen anything from Ali on tape that says to me that he should have a bigger role. That is not to say that once the preseason starts, once he gets through camp, once he gets into Ravens strength training and the Ravens get their hands on trying to mold him as a player, that can't change. And I think, you know, a lot of people, the difference, I think, when you look at Keaton Mitchell as an example, there were a lot of fans that were really excited about his big play ability when they went back and looked at it after the Ravens added him last year. I go back and look at Ali, and this is not to say that he can't be a good running back in the league, but you don't see the same thing. And Keith Mitchell fully fulfilled that potential at the top end.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm a little bit surprised, and I've got 440 double asterisk other is the time I've got on him for the 40. I look at him on tape. It doesn't really look like he runs away from defensive backs. He doesn't have the same. I mean, Mitchell was 437, I think, and not 433. But anyway, whatever he was, there's a lot more than that in terms of the difference between the two, whether it's 0.07 or 0.03 seconds. It shows out on tape with a Keaton Mitchell. And, I'm not way down on the Ali pick or anything. I just didn't like it as much as some of the other guys who were available. I like Javon Solomon out of Troy was available then, or Keaton Oladapo of Oregon State could have solved their safety problems. They had two guards, Trevor Keegan and Christian Mahogany were still on the board at that point. They had lots of need positions to fill. And I kind of felt like they kind of settled a little bit on Ali as a running back when there were other choices still to come.
And they get tunnel vision in some of these instances around certain players. I mean, even with Wiggins, I think everybody thinks retrospectively at this point that Wiggins was a good pick. We'll find out. Obviously, that's how these things work. But they definitely had some tunnel vision when it came to Wiggins. It was almost like they would have had to been so overwhelmed by a trade offer in that instance to even consider it in the first place. That pick was in so quickly when the Ravens got onto the clock. And so the Ravens have their guys that they like to, you know, whatever you want to call them, red star, five star, gold star, whatever you want to call those guys. The Ravens can get tunnel visioned, I think, sometimes onto certain players, and whoever that's coming from, whether it's the coaching staff, the scouting staff, whichever side that's coming from, it does seem like a thing that happens. And so he seems to definitely be in that bucket.
Huge gamble on Wiggins this year. And the gamble, I mean, the gamble on Wiggins is relatively minimal, and he's going to have a good career, I'm fairly sure. And when he does, people are going to say, another great first round pick for the Baltimore Ravens. But the gamble wasn't there. The gamble was at left tackle and the high barriers to entry they have. They had to overpay in the second round for Rosengarten, and that may be just a down payment on how much they have to overpay to get their left tackle solution in 2024. So it is a case of I love Wiggins the player, my number one cornerback, very happy to get him, very happy to get TJ Tampa, who is the number one sixth corner on my board. But I'm not happy that they turned their backs the way they did. In fact, it's almost like they took a half measure. Taking Rosengarten was a 20 pick over selection, probably, in terms of the consensus boards. You could say it's more than that if you don't really like Rosengarten. You could say it's less than that if you love Rosengarten. But I think 20 picks is probably reasonable in terms of the overpayment. That's a not insignificant amount of JJ capital flushed. And flushed is the wrong word, because they were going to have to overpay at some point to get left tackle filled. That's just the nature of the thing. But the risk they took is they took Wiggins, a great player, potentially. And in exchange, they gave up the one-year landing strip they have. And now they've got a very short runway next year in terms of finding that left tackle and making sure they can stick him. They got to get lucky in a later round two probably, or they got to maybe trade up, or they got to it's hard to see what else they do. Have a temporary solution maybe that's even from outside the organization.
Yeah, like I said, if you don't think that the Ravens have questions at offensive line coming into this year, I don't know what to tell you. It's good. You know, Lamar cures a lot of wounds along the offensive line. Derrick Henry will also cure a lot of wounds along the offensive line. And so I think that's part of the Ravens strategy here, which is that where do we have to allocate our cap? And do we have ways to overcome what could be deficiencies in these areas? Can our scheme and can what we're doing overcome that? But all we can do is wait and see and keep our fingers crossed.
Fair enough. Let's talk about what a good season, a great season looks like for Rashan Ali. I'll let you go first as a guest. What does a good season look like to you?
I mean, if we're talking about this again, kind of absolute of kind of the Ravens performance overall, I think 350-ish yards would be a good season if Ali got those touches, looking for something like 4.4 to 4.6 a carry coming out of a rookie and for what we're seeing from him.
Okay. I think that's reasonable. I'll just say fills a stylistic niche for the Ravens. I'm not even going to put any minimum playing time on it, because if Derrick Henry has 325 carries, like Monken says, the Ravens are having a great year. In any case, any durable Derrick Henry season, I think the Ravens are going to be happy with. I think that he'll provide enough. He may not have quite the success rate the Ravens have had in the past, which may be partially offensive line based, But anyway, I think the Ravens will be quite successful if Derrick Henry gets 300 or more carries for the season. So I won't put any limit as a minimum on what he does. I want him to hold on to the football. It's not a guarantee with Ali, but it's a guarantee that he'll lose a lot of playing time if he starts losing it, losing the football with Harbaugh. So that's going to be part of what a good season would entail. He's got to contribute on special teams to the degree necessary, whatever that means. And I don't really know where they would use him necessarily. He might be covering kicks. He might be a guy who we see returning kicks as one of three or four or five guys who are doing so in camp, particularly on the kickoffs, would not surprise me at all, because the way they're talking about that being the, you know, first offensive play of a drive kind of thing is potentially very interesting. And Ali could be a good fit for that, as, you know, Hardy, I think, is a good fit, or Hill is a good fit. But anyway, I think that's it. I have really very low expectations. And I think, you know, I wouldn't even put a minimum number of yards or snaps or anything. Could be 150 or 200 yards. I'd say it'd be nice if he were fairly regularly active with that, maybe 9 to 10 games at least active. The Ravens may find another guy who really fits their needs for 2023. That's 24. That's not on the roster yet. So, I don't think it's necessarily a complete downer for Ali if he's not active for all 17 games. But anyway, that's where I would see it for a good season.
I think you do. There is some expectation that early in the season that he will be active, but only because of the Mitchell injury. Yeah. You know, the Ravens are pretty hard and fast about making sure that there are three active running backs in every given week. So from an expectation point there, I think the kickoff return thing is interesting, right? And it's going to be really interesting to see what the Ravens do on those plays. But, you know, one cut running style is a really good fit for what it seems like the way this is getting set up. I think Derrick Henry could see some snaps back there at the end of the day, that you could, and that again, in these one cut situations where Henry's got to beat two guys and break a tackle because everybody's spread out everywhere else and he's going to break it to the house. You know, it's interesting to see what the Ravens will do back there, but the Ravens are set up really well, I think, from a return game perspective, with a guy like Henry, but then also with Hardy as that addition. I think it's unlikely. It would be, I would put that into the great category, that if we end up seeing Ali returning kicks, then that means that we're seeing something completely different from him in camp and in the preseason games than we've seen on tape.
This is a really good year to have good special teams coaching in the NFL because of that change. That change is going to be very dramatic in terms of how it impacts the game. I feel certain of that. And I feel certain the Ravens will be able to take advantage of it, whether they're kicking or receiving. So I think I'm excited about it either way. And I think it generally will play into the Ravens' favor. All right. How about a great season? What does a great season look like from Ali?
I mean, so to me, it's kind of like that 4.8, 4.9 plus yards per carry if he is actually getting on the field. So you're seeing him put up a performance that you're comfortable enough to see him on actually performing. I think seeing a Justice Hill level special teams performance would put him into a great performance category. Justice Hill's also, we talked about his run blocking ability, but his gunner ability turned out to be really fantastic. I think that could be a place that Ali could really shine. And I'm curious whether or not the Ravens label him or think that was part of the value here and maybe be part of the reason they were willing to overdraft him a little bit, because they have lost a lot of core special teamers, it feels like, over the last few years, and guys that have been traditionally on board for that. No pun intended when I said that, but Chris Borg coming back is another example where the Ravens obviously are putting some kind of premium as they're trying to figure out what special teams are going to look like. So I do think that's the spot where he could really shine from a Ravens performance perspective in this year.
That's it. That's a good one. Anything else for a great season for you?
You know, again, at running back, I think I would say that it finding his niche within the offense and like finding that role of whatever that might be. Obviously, we've already kind of maligned him a bit from a pass catcher perspective. So figuring out where he has a dedicated role and one that he could use would be a great thing for the Ravens, I think.
Okay. I've got a few things here. The first thing is, I think in a great season, he's probably forced into a trial by fire. And unfortunately, that could be a nuclear scenario for the Ravens where Derrick Henry is hurt or misses time, or perhaps everybody else is gone and Henry's the only back, and then Ali has to see time. But finds a niche, it plays well on a rate basis. And one of the points I would put on here is he probably has to contribute something in the passing game. And it doesn't have to be as the pass catching back, sorry, a third down back where he might have some pass blocking responsibility that he'd have a lot of difficulty succeeding in, but it could be pony backfield. You know, he could be in there with Henry and be a receiving option that gives you kind of a extra speed guy on the field. The Ravens, you know, they lost Devin Duvernay. And
didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They will start the season without Keaton Mitchell. They still have Justice Hill. They still have Zay Flowers. But it'd be nice to have another guy who had some real burst. And I think that Ali could be that guy if you want to split him wide, if you want to jet motion him, whatever it might be. So there's niches available, and I think that playmaking gadget speed role is certainly something he could fill as well.
Yeah, I think we'd all love to see more Pony, especially with Derrick Henry on board. I think a lot of us have been advocating for more Pony for a long time. So, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you signal with Pony is the reason why we don't see it on, 25% of the snaps or something. We only see it a couple times per game. But you signal to the other team, you're probably not passing on this play, and your play is probably revolving around that guy that running back who split wide, or something operating opposite of his motion. So you kind of key off on that. The wide receivers and the tight ends become less of an issue. And I think part of designing good Pony plays is figuring out how can your wide receivers make use of that situation there. And is that a place where Bateman could catch some more balls, say, and break one of the house when he's on an island? But anyway, interesting stuff there. So anyway, good discussion on Ali. How about we move on to Travis Jones?
Yeah, I mean, just off the top, I think Travis Jones is going to be a star for the Ravens this year. You asked me who I wanted to cover in this podcast. The reason I picked this pair was Travis Jones. I think that, and statistically, you can read, you can look at what his numbers were for last year, but it's not going to tell you anything. 36 combined tackles, 1.5 sacks. Doesn't mean a thing, right? And the way that he can have a role, the Ravens are going to count on him, and they're counting on their whole defensive line coming back. We saw him throw some guys around like ragdolls this past year. And I think that the third year is the right year in this projection for him. It's the right fit, especially with questions that the Ravens have along the outside linebacker position. Just have sky high expectations for Travis Jones this year.
I think that's very reasonable. I mean, he looked like, from the very first preseason game, he looked like the man who was playing among boys. And his role really evolved during the year. An incredible year for the defensive line as a whole. Let's start there. The whole season, five guys played every defensive line snap, and they played 2.20 defensive linemen per play, which means the average of those five guys played 44% of the snaps, 2.20 over five. So anyway, they really made up for losing Calais Campbell. I don't remember hearing it very often. I don't remember saying it very often last year about, during the season, as things are going by and everybody's healthy and everybody's still playing. And they only had, a couple games where they only had four guys active. But they just did a remarkable job of making up for losing Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think somebody recently in the mainstream media came out with an article saying that the Ravens should take a look at bringing Calais Campbell back. And it's kind of like, for where, right?
For, yeah.
Well, even if you think about that, I mean, if you're looking at Madubuike, Pierce, and Travis Jones on the field to start games, where is there a spot for Calais Campbell? I mean, I guess if you're committed to a full rotation and you really want that defensive line depth, but the way the Ravens use two-tech technique and the way they approach defensive line play from that position, obviously health considerations aside, the Ravens are just really well-established in defensive line, which is somewhat fascinating because I think before the Ravens drafted Travis Jones, there were very real questions about what the Ravens defensive line was going to look like in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, nobody was signed for 2024 at this point last year. And then all of a sudden, all five guys are back. Broderick Washington, I always have to make sure I don't call him Brandon Williams. Broderick Washington was re-signed for 3 years. He'll be here for this year and probably next year as well, since the value from cutting him is about what you'd have to pay otherwise. A guy who's going to be around. You have Madubuike now signed long-term. You have Travis Jones, who's still got two more years with the Ravens, and I hope a lot more because I think he'll be a star like you do. And then Michael Pierce, who has all of a sudden become a great player again in his 30s and is one of the most dominant players. But I want to talk about the evolution we saw from Jones during the year, because Pierce originally was very dominant as a pass rusher. Definitely lots of third down snaps he was playing. He was paired up with Matapike. They were doing a good job on stunts and twists. You know, you had a pair of guys there who were really getting it done from the inside. And then the Ravens did the amazing thing. They developed a third. And most teams, I mean, they struggle to have one guy from the inside. The Ravens teams of the past have struggled to have one guy from the inside. And that's why you've seen a lot of rush nickel and some race car in past years, is they really didn't have interior pass rushers who were particularly good. Well, now they've all of a sudden got three. And not only does Travis Jones emerge as a very good starting pressure guy, a guy who's really compressing the pocket, creating the first man in the quarterback's face, having the cone break down in front of the quarterback, which is what you really want from your interior guys. He created a lot of those first pressure opportunities that led to Clowney and Van Noy and others having the big sack years that they did. And he eventually took over Pierce's role, which to me is incredible given the kind of series, kind of season that Michael Pierce had. Just a great season from Travis Joseph last year.
Yeah. I think that there is the pocket pressure from the interior is just something that it's been really nice to see. I feel like it's been a long time since thinking back to like the year with Jernigan. Having that Trevor Price, just having those guys that could rush to the interior side of that pocket. Travis Jones looks like he can be that guy, but he also simultaneously looks like he will not be moved aside in terms of run defense, which is also core to what the Ravens love. And so if the Ravens can pony up the money for Brandon Williams, they're going to find the money for Travis Jones when the time comes. I think he just very much is a Ravens style player in that regard.
You just did it. What I do constantly called him Brandon Williams, but you mean Broderick Washington.
No. I said, if they could have found the money for Brandon Williams when they re-signed Brandon Williams, definitely going to find the money for Travis Jones.
Legitimate use of Brandon.
And so, I think that the way that he can be deployed, I think the way that he helps keep Michael Pierce healthy, the way it's going to allow them to rotate things all along the defensive line, obviously, again, health being, its own consideration, really excited about the Ravens defensive line. And it makes you excited about the limited, for all that, Ajabo and Owe may have taken some heat, Ajabo from a health perspective, Owe from not having some of the splash plays that I think some people would want to see from a first round pick. The defensive line, in the same way that they set Matabike up for having the number of sacks that he had last year, and they set Van Noy up, like you mentioned, and Clowney last year, I think there's a really big opportunity for Van Noy again, for Owe and Ajabo, if he's healthy, to really take advantage of how the defensive line is going to play this year.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll toss Adisa Isaac in that group too, because I don't think he's fourth on that four-man list necessarily. I think it might be Ajabo who's the number four guy in that.
That's probably right.
So we'll see how that plays out. They certainly, if you had your pick and you could get a good year out of Ajabo or a good year out of Isaac, but not both, you take Isaac every year because the Ravens control him for 4 years. So you definitely need him to step forward. All right. Well, is there anything else I wanted to say here? I did love his run defense. I was a little sad that the Ravens didn't try more 1-3 with those two guys, keep Matabike fresh. Matabike, honestly, as often as I made the comment last year that the Ravens needed Matabike to play fewer snaps, that he'd be more effective. Matabike had a great year and a lot of snaps this last year. Certainly came through in that regard. I still probably would say a few less snaps would be a good thing for Matabike to stay fresher. And that might include playing more three tech of Travis Jones on early downs and getting a little more play in it. And I do think Travis Jones could take a higher workload, even though he's up to, I think, 39% of the snaps. Yeah, 39% of the snaps in year two. He's a guy I could see playing 50%. Maybe you wouldn't want it, but I think the question going for the rest of Travis Jones' career with the Ravens, as long as that is, I think the question is going to be, how can we keep him fresh by taking him off the field on snaps where we don't absolutely need him, as opposed to on what snaps can we afford to have Travis Jones on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's totally right. How are we maximizing the type of performance and what are we getting from him? Do we need him to be the absolute run stopper because we have that's the area that we're the weakest, or do we need him to be that pass rush interior guy in those passing situations? I think the Ravens will. That's what's so fantastic about Travis Jones and where his upside is. So they can play him as a wild card in that sense.
All right. Well, let's go and move on and talk about it. What a good season and a great season looks like for Travis Jones. Go ahead and you start it off.
Yeah, I mean, I think a good season looks a lot like exactly what 2024 was, right? Because, or sorry, 2023 was. We got a lot of great play out of Travis Jones, 40-ish percent in terms of the number of snaps that he's going to take. Obviously found a very clear home in terms of the rotations and what they were doing with the defense. You know, I think that maybe I would raise the bar in terms of sacks, you know, or some of those performance-based numbers in there, just because I think that the opportunities are going to be there for him. But I think a good season looks a lot like last season. And even if that's all we got from Travis Jones in 2024, I would still very much be happy with that.
I would agree. And I think there is the possibility of regression. But in terms of my good level, very similar to you. I'll just read it to you directly. Small steps forward in technique and ability to win one-on-one as a pass rusher. Shows a small improvement in the ability to deny space. I think he could be better there. Snaps increased to 40 to 45% with a healthy Pierce. It will be higher, by the way, if Pierce is lost. They don't really have a replacement for him other than Jones. Increases his tackling productivity per run play with an improved missed tackle rate, something we didn't talk about earlier, but his missed tackles were up a little bit this last year. I'm not concerned about it, but it was an area of game that was very good in his rookie season. Stays on the field with Madubuike on obvious passing downs and continues to create second chance sack opportunities. I want pressure. I want compression pressure. I don't need PFF pressures. I need film study pressures. I need the ones that impede the cone as opposed to they are called up pressure by PFF, because PFF is actually very generous with offensive linemen in particular in terms of their basically allowing people into the cone, but not having any impact on the sack. So anyway, they do have an impact on the sack, but PFF doesn't grade them as having an impact on the sack. So that's where I am with a good season for Jones. So this is very similar, I think, to you.
Yeah, I think everybody should be, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, if you haven't noticed Travis Jones, it's worth keeping an eye on, because even if you're getting 2023 performance levels, if you're paying attention, you're gonna see a really good football player.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player, certainly. How about I do this? I'm going to read my great season from last year, and then we can even each give our great season for this year.
Okay.
And you know, I'm pretty close to the pin here if I said this, but this is from last season's show. Steps forward with a big improvement in pass rush productivity that makes him a consideration for passing down snaps, either as a solo lineman or in place of an additional kicked in outside linebacker. Exactly what happened, by the way. Develop stunt synergies with other defenders, whether as over or under. Also hit. Pass rush may not show up in a gaudy sack total, but pocket compression creates second man opportunities. Run defense improves modestly at nose tackle and dramatically when used at a three tech. You'd get a lot of time at three tech. Snap counts exceeds 50%, which makes the 2024 defensive line rebuild seem less daunting.
Yep. Spot on.
Right. let's hear your great season for 24.
So I think a great season for 24 looks more like 50-ish percent, 50 plus. I'd say even 50 plus percent of snaps on the field, in the sense that the Ravens can't keep Travis Jones off the field, right? Like he's a guy that, even in those instances, he's a guy that they've got to play, that the drop-off between him and Broderick Washington versus, you know, him tired versus Broderick Washington is still too big for him not to be able to play. I think we see an increase, and I think this is going to happen. I think that we see an increase in the sack total. I think it's going to look more like four to six sacks for Travis Jones this upcoming year. He's just too explosive and too strong for them not to be able to do that. Obviously, the coaching, I think, from a Ravens perspective, the pass rush coaching is obviously really improved over the last couple of years. Guys are coming in with a much clearer intention of what they're trying to do. You saw it. I mean, I hate to use his name, but you saw it with Patrick Queen and the way he would approach, you know, the stunts and the pick plays and what they were doing. They were way more intentional about what they were trying to accomplish. I think that's the most easiest way to see what they were doing. I think the Ravens are being a lot more intentional, both with pass rush moves and pass rush concepts. And I think that that's going to pay off for Travis Jones. As you get to be in that hierarchy of seeing more snaps, as Justin Madubuike continues to get more attention that he will, because of the year that he had, the contract that he had, he still doesn't really he still doesn't really get the attention from the national media at the level of his performance and the statistics that he put up from last year. So hopefully that continues to help drive him. But I do think teams are going to start to scheme around him more. It's going to leave Travis Jones in more one-on-one type of situations if the Ravens allow him to get set up that way. And I think he's going to just absolutely dominate those situations. I think the other part of a great season is continued top-end run defense. You know, being able to keep, you know, not even needing Roquan Smith and Trenton Simpson to be needing to be able to come up on these plays. You know, we've seen Travis Jones be able to be a one, and Madubuike too. We've seen them, both of them, be able to absolutely shed and destroy the blocks in front of them from a run defense perspective and stop the play in the backfield. I would want to see, I don't have a number of how many of those he had last year, but we would want to see, you know, a quality number of those plays in big situations coming from Travis Jones to kind of put that great label on the season.
Yeah, some of the things we saw from Michael Pierce this last year, just being an unbelievable force on fourth down as needed and whatnot. I agree. Great season. I've got a lot of similar stuff. Snap count grows to over 50% as a reflection of talent and not injuries to others on the line. Run defense is stout with missed tackle total between 22 and 23, forces his way into some three tech snaps to leverage his pass rush chops. That would be on early downs. I would see it. I still think Madubuike will be the three tech mostly. They could come up with some weird looks where Madubuike is an edge rusher and Travis Jones is a three tech and Pierce is still on the field at nose. They could do some weird things like that. I'd look forward to it if they do. Disrupts with stunts, bull rush, active hands in the air, and compression rate to create more second man opportunities. Plays 15 plus games, fills in however is needed to overcome minor injury setbacks to other linemen. He is the key piece there, guys. Madubuike is here hurt. Travis Jones has got to be the guy. If Pierce is hurt, Travis Jones has got to be the guy. If Broderick Washington is hurt, it may mean a bigger role at three tech or that snaps get spread out more. And Travis Jones is, again, the guy who is going to have to pick up a lot of that extra work. So those are my requirements. Nothing about the sack total specifically. I think he can have a great season even with 2 to 4 sacks this next year.
Yeah, I don't want it to be misqualified that he needs 4+ sacks to have a great season. You know, we talked about breaking down the pocket, what that pressure does, how that affects the games. I think that the Ravens love to move. They've always loved to move quarterbacks off their spot. They care about that almost. You know, I thought it was a funny thing that happened with Dan Campbell where he, in a press conference, basically said something along the lines of sacks are a little overrated. And that's me kind of cutting his quote down and the pressures are great. And that wasn't completely what he said, but it set off kind of this conversation where maybe pressures are getting overstated. But I think if you look at the Ravens' philosophy, yes, they've racked up a ton of sacks over the history of the Ravens team, but they care much more about moving quarterbacks off their spot, making them uncomfortable, making them have to move around to make decisions and what they're trying to do. I think we'll continue to see that approach. And I think Travis Jones, like you said, plays a big part. Also, his Swiss Army nature to be able to be both the backup to Madubuike and the backup to Michael Pierce is a huge part to what the defensive line is capable of doing. And the fact that a guy like Calais Campbell isn't needed, I think is a direct attribute to Travis Jones.
If you didn't think pressure was important for some reason, this is the Ravens are actually a remarkable team at holding quarterbacks down with ample time and space, but I'll give you the three numbers. Ample time and space, the Ravens gave up 6.9 yards per play, which is unbelievably good, by the way. Most teams would be up probably north of 8 yards per play. The Ravens had just a great year of pass defense, so they were terrific in that case. That was about 26.4% of the snaps they gave up ATS to, which is also, you know, a nice, not too high number. Ball out quick, and a lot of teams try to get the ball out quickly against the Baltimore Ravens to the outside. They did it not particularly successfully with you-know-who, number 14, watching the strong side of the field, 6.0 yards per play with ball out quick. When the Ravens got pressure this last year, 2.3 yards per play allowed in 57 of their 62 snaps, including the playoffs. So it's a pretty stark contrast. It was also the highest group by number. So 40.9% of their pass plays against, they got pressure. So it wasn't just a matter of they did great when they got it, when they, you know, they got it often as well. And I think the Ravens, to be good again this year, are going to need to have a lot of those pressures. Those all occur within 3 seconds, by the way. If it's an extended pocket, it goes in that ATS category before the first pressure. So pressures are critical.
Yeah, absolutely. Travis Jones is going to be a big part of it. My expectations for the Ravens defense are sky high for anybody that thinks that the drop off from Patrick Queen to Trenton Simpson and the drop off. I mean, Clowney to whoever is going to be on the other side is the one area that probably concerns me the most. But outside of that, there are really just no questions, you know, in terms of who's coming back.
How about the question of a drop off from McDonald to Orr?
You know, that's a good one, especially in terms of as the league continues to adjust to what Mike McDonald was doing and other coaches and other systems implementing that, right? I think the Ravens use a lot of malleability in terms of what you would see from the back end, a lot of zone in terms of some of what those concepts were, and then rolling and moving coverage around to attack different parts of what that looked like it was going to be. So the question is, how much of that was solely the pure genius of Mike McDonald, and how much of that is the system and its ability to allow a guy to do that? Now, Zach Orr, obviously as a player and an off-ball linebacker, is a guy that should understand those concepts to the fullest degree. So if it is the system allows a guy that's able to see those things to make those adjustments and make those calls, then there really shouldn't be any problem at all. If the issue is that it was just Mike McDonald saw things that other people didn't see, then there's going to be a drop off. But that's just always going to happen then.
Could be in-game adjustments is one thing that other people have pointed to. I just want to get your take on that. I think other people have heard my take on it enough times.
I think Marvin Lewis is the example where, yes, he took a defense that was already really good to a higher level, obviously because of what he brought, but it was more system-based, philosophy-based, things that were able to be carried over. When Marvin Lewis left, you didn't see this huge drop off in terms of the performance of what the Ravens defense had. I think that we're going to see something similar from McDonald to Orr. And I think the Ravens would have tried harder maybe to keep McDonald if they didn't think that was the case.
Well, that's an interesting comment. They might have. And I think the Ravens have had such good continuity from defensive coach to defensive coach. None of them have been bad. Not one of their guys, including Madison, who gets all kinds of crap in this town, was bad. Every one of them has been good. And the fact that they all went on to head coaching jobs, pretty much. I mean, Lewis went on to be a head coach, not right away from the Ravens. He went to that year of purgatory in Washington first, and then he went to the Bengals. But Mike Nolan moved on to be a head coach. Jack Del Rio didn't leave again directly, but he became a head coach afterwards. Rex Ryan, of course, became a head coach and foot enthusiast. So, he had further careers after that. And Pagano went on and became a head coach. And I'm missing somebody. Madison did not. Madison is the one guy who did not.
DPs did not, but
went on to be, you know, defensive coordinator somewhere else right away. It wasn't like he was cast into the abyss. And of course, Martindale went on to be another good coach. And now McDonald has done it, and I'm sure he has a chance to be a good head coach. But you know, the one thing I look at during most of this, because it stretches all the way back to Rex Ryan, is that Harbaugh has been able to find the next guy very regularly. And, he has to get some credit for that. People have to stop saying, oh, how can we possibly let this young guy go? Because we've got a 61-year-old coach and he's not going to be around forever. And you're losing a dynasty out of this and blah, 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 blah. Well, I mean, Harbaugh has built dynasty after dynasty. And it's what great winning coaches do. They continually have to rebuild their staff because their staff gets great opportunities.
Well, this conversation, this podcast is not about how good of a coach John Harbaugh is, but John Harbaugh takes a lot of crap from Baltimore fans that he doesn't deserve. He is a phenomenal coach and he's a phenomenal organizational coach. And that's what most people don't understand. They want a guy like Sean McVay that's drawing up the X and the O's and is running on the field and seems like he's best friends with the players. But I think what John Harbaugh has brought to the Ravens team, like you were just saying, from coaching philosophies to what he did with the locker room that he had to take over with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed to transform it to where it is now, that is not something that is easily done. I mean, you even watched someone like Bill Belichick not be able to ride out the transition off of Tom Brady through the New England Patriots, right? So Harbaugh's ability to kind of get through all of that is really underrated, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and I'm obviously very happy, and I think, you know, Harbaugh has got most of the background scenery he needs to be a Hall of Fame coach right now. He's going to need to win one more Super Bowl probably, but he's got the incredible one lost record. He's got one of the most successful franchises. It'd be hard for him. It won't be hard for him to miss the Hall of Fame from this point forward because he does still need to get probably a second championship. But he's one hell of a coach. All right, Jordan, always a pleasure doing any discussion about football with you. Great ideas in terms of these two players. Passion really shows through on Travis Jones, and I share it with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at Raven Sit Room. And the co-host from the Raven Situation Room, Gabe Fergie, we love to talk football over there. I think there's even more Orioles talk is starting to bleed in this year. So it's a really good time to be a Baltimore fan.
it sure is. I can tell you, it's been unbelievable excitement going to the games. Just these last 2 days of beating the crap out of the Toronto Blue Jays in the first 2 games of the series. So I'll let you know exactly where we are. We're late on Tuesday night recording this. So the Orioles have won the first 2 games of the series, 7-2 and 10-1. That's the hallmark of a great baseball team. They beat the living snot out of the other team on a regular basis. And the Toronto Blue Jays are now, I think, 7-14 in games decided by 5+ runs. And the Orioles, I don't know what their record is, but it's very good. So might be 11-5 or thereabouts. But anyway, it's they've been outstanding with that. And if you look back to the great teams like the 69 Orioles, you'll see they have similar records. And invariably, great teams are not as good in one run games, but it's hard to fake your run or your team's quality in 5-run games.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Other folks out there who want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Just tell me what you have for an idea. That's great. You want a recollection series, tell me your player. I'll reserve him for it. I'm sure you know, guys know what that is by now, the good listeners who've been here the whole time. And I still have a couple of spots left for this expectation series. If you want to be in that, there's only about 5 pairings left to choose from. But if you'd like to be on it, I want to try and include as many people as I can because it gives an opportunity to give a broad set of views, as you just heard from Jordan, that stretch to other positions like the outside linebacker, who we're not talking about in this particular episode, but it plays peripherally with what's happening on the defensive line. So hit me up if you'd like to be included in that. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.